40 WCEM AM. The views and opinions expressed by the host, callers, and guests are not necessarily the views and opinions of MTS Broadcasting staff and management. It's Shore Law with Chad Malkus on Radio 1240 WCEM AM.
Good morning and welcome to Shore Law with Chad Malkus. Legal insights into business, wealth preservation, and life on the Eastern Shore. I'm your host, Chad Malkus. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Michael Hodes LLC. We have law offices in Towson, Columbia, Salisbury, Easton, and here in Cambridge on the good old Eastern Shore of Maryland, located at our new office at 513 Court Lane, downtown Cambridge. Historic Cambridge. Historic downtown Cambridge. Here on the Eastern Shore. So today we're going to be talking about some of the secrets behind companies where employees love to work. And I'm going to be talking today with Les Landis. He is the author of Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. That's a long title, Les.
Well, you know...
Did you get paid by the word? I mean, sometimes they make the joke that lawyers get paid by the word.
But, well, I was just going to say that sounds more like a lawyer problem than...
I know, it really does. I went to that old joke, but, yeah. You know, that's okay. So, Les, you know, I was really interested in this topic because... last year, I was part of at the beginning of the year, I was still working for a large law firm out of based in Baltimore. And my partner, Michael Hodes, and I decided we were sort of tired of working for the big guys, and we wanted to branch out on our own and really focus more on our own practices and more of a highly focused, what we call a boutique practice,
right,
focusing on elder care, estate planning, that sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, you still need the employees. We still, you know, we were starting brand new firm, starting at whole cloth, but, you know, we have about 15-16 employees as part of it, you know, a couple more attorneys and paralegals and assistants and secretaries and that sort of thing. So, you know, now, as opposed to I could always sort of refer any issue up the line or that sort of thing, I now found myself even much more in a managerial role as sort of a boss. You know, really for the – it's not the first time I've been a boss or been in a managerial role, but so sort of – you know, I was very interested in what you have to say as far as making it – making the workplace a good environment to work in with,
right,
while at the same time being you know, still being firm and getting the most out of your employees. So
yeah.
Go
yeah.
into a little bit of what you term it employee engagement. Go into that a little bit, what that is, what that's
yeah,
all about.
So let me just ask you, first of all.
Okay. Oh, you're going to ask me. This is good. Nobody ever asked me a question on my show.
Yeah, actually, because I want to get, you know what, I have to tell you something before we get started here.
Yeah.
I'm getting feedback on this, so I'm hearing myself speak twice, and I don't think I can do that for an hour.
Okay,
I can
all right.
barely stand here myself once.
Okay, no problem. We'll try and see what we can do to clear that out. We might have to after the break. We might have to call back or that sort of thing, and try and get that straightened out. We'll see
all
what
right.
we can do to clear that up.
Great, sounds good. So the question I have for you is, you know, you've been doing your manager thing here for a while. When did you start your new firm?
We started in May of last year.
Yes. So how's that management thing going for you?
It's good. It's going pretty well. You know, no major issues. The firm's been going gangbusters. And, you know, we're actually bringing on a few more people, bringing a few more people online. But, you know, it's not without its, you know, little hiccups here and there.
Well, yeah. I mean, even with the ideal situation, human beings being what they are, there's no such thing as the perfect work environment where everybody
right.
is completely aligned and everybody loves one another and everything is hunky-dory. The key is what kind of basic underlying policies and processes and systems do you have to ensure that you're really enabling people to do the very best they can and give the very most that they're able to and willing to give.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that you say that because the previous firm was very big on process and procedures and
mm-hmm.
policies, et cetera, et cetera. And,
right.
it's to be perfectly honest, it's something we wanted to try to get away from as as much as we possibly could without sort of sacrificing you know, the efficiency of the workplace and that sort of thing. Now, you know, we're developing policies, putting some things in place, but it's been very, you know, there's been certainly a concerted effort to try and get away from some of that. But that's probably not always the best idea.
Yeah, so let me jump in. I think this is a great place to have this conversation because there's a perception out there that employees don't like command and control.
Right.
Well, they don't like command, I guarantee that. But it's not the control thing that they dislike.
Right.
People want, they crave control. They want systems to be in control.
Yeah.
They want to have some control. They don't want things to be going half-cocked 8 ways from Sunday.
Right.
And so the key is when you're putting together these systems, policies, and processes, which you need to have in any organization that has more than 2 people in it.
Right.
Get them involved in the process.
Right. Right. Well,
make
you know,
sure
I
that the
I,
victims. Excuse me.
No.
Make sure that the victims, if you will, of these systems, policies, and processes have an opportunity to design them and have their feedback and input on how it's going to work and how they can survive and thrive most effectively in that environment.
Okay. You know, I it's funny that you sort of mentioned that, and because I get thinking about it sometimes almost like being a parent. You know, I'm the father of 2 boys, and as much as they hate the rules and procedures, they also need it, and they crave it, actually. They need that structure. They, you know, and it's important to have that sort of structure. And people don't have a problem playing by the rules as long as they know what the rules are.
Well, and as long as they, this is, I'm going to make a distinction here between between your parenting, which is, no kidding, one of the models that organizations use when they look at how we're going to manage a group of people.
Uh-huh.
The problem with parenting is that you really are sort of laying out the rules.
Yeah.
The issue with people who are working with you, not for you, but working with you, is that they want to be part of formulating those rules. So it's not just knowing the rules.
Yeah.
It's having an opportunity to weigh in on those rules.
Okay.
And say what's working, what's not working.
So you recommend bringing the employees into the process and saying, okay, if we're going to set out a policy for time off, for example, then bring them into the process to say, what would be sort of the ideal situation? What are we going to look at for proper structure for this as far as asking for time off, ways and ways, you know, what do you think? And you're saying that engaging your employees in that type of process makes for a better work environment.
Absolutely. And, you know, some folks say to me, well, you know, doesn't that take a lot of time? Well, yeah, a little bit. But would you rather have people who have bought into the system and are going to be eager and willing to work with it, or do you want to have them kicking and screaming and dragging along the way?
Right. Well, and I look at everything back to employee retention because so much time and so much money is lost by losing an employee and then having to bring a new employee on, get them up to speed, training them, getting them. I mean, you can lose 6 months, you know.
Well, I think,
or more.
In fact, there's an actual number out there that says it costs about 60% of a person's salary to replace them.
Wow. Wow. 60%.
60% of a person's salary to replace them.
Wow.
The time it takes, the lost productivity, sometimes you hire search firms, all of those kinds of things all go into the cost of replacing an employee. It's very high.
Whereas if you had better policies in place and made it a better sort of work environment for them so that you wouldn't, you know, they could feel like they were valued and rewarded and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I mean, it's, you know, you still gotta get the work out of them and that sort of thing, you know. But so I guess finding
Let me stop you.
Okay.
You don't need to get the work out of them.
Okay.
This is a fundamental flaw in the way people think about others in the organization.
Well, good. Correct me.
People come to work because they want to work.
Okay.
I mean, that goes back to McGregor's book, The Human Side of Enterprise, Theory X, Theory Y.
Okay.
Theory X says, you know, people are lazy, they don't want to work, and they'll do whatever they can to get out of it.
Right.
Theory Y says people want to work. They love to work, as long as they've got the right kinds of conditions and environment to do that work. In fact, Freud said there are only two things that people need fundamentally to be happy. That's love and meaningful work.
Right.
So it's not about getting work out of them. It's about creating the conditions in which these people who are already motivated to work and do well, the
creating the systems where they can
right.
where they can work and thrive. Well, I agree with you there to the extent, you know, there's a caveat there that I think our society, unfortunately, is increasingly moving towards people that absolutely don't want to work and are perfectly happy to sit back and let the government take care of them and buy them iPhones and that sort of thing.
Well, so let's step politics aside here for a second. You're talking about Romney's 47%, right?
Yeah.
So we got to set that aside because that's fundamentally untrue.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally untrue about human beings.
Okay.
They want to thrive. They want to contribute. And yeah, let's face it, there are a lot of things that happen in society to the point that you're making
right.
that kind of get in the way of people being able to do that. But that kind of goes back to the fundamental premise of my book,
mm-hmm.
Which is why it has such a long title.
Right. Right. Just to remind people, it's Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. So,
right.
So talk a little bit about that, though, Les, the free will part
in the workplace.
What's that go to?
So I'm actually going to go back to the beginning of the title,
okay?
Because you asked me at the very beginning of this, you know, what do we mean by employee engagement, and we kind of got sidetracked.
I get sidetracked on my show. No question there. I sidetrack myself.
So I'm going to start with that, and then we'll jump into the imagination and free will thing.
Okay.
Lots of different definitions out there of what employee engagement looks like, feels like, acts like in the workplace.
Uh-huh.
The one that I really like was actually created by the conference board, five, 6 years ago, is a heightened emotional connection that employees feel for their organization that influences them to exert greater discretionary effort to their work.
Okay.
Now, lots of words again.
Yeah.
Key phrase here, though, two of them. Emotional connection.
All right.
And discretionary effort.
Okay.
Now, those two things go hand in hand.
So they have to have an emotional connection
That's
to the work?
Correct.
Okay.
Or to the organization,
to the company, all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, people do need meaningful, interesting work.
Sure.
And in fact, that, you know, in a survey that was done by a guy we know, Ken Kovac, at George Mason University, quite a few years ago, I asked employees, what are the things that get you to go the extra mile on the job? Which is sort of a reflection of that discretionary effort, that greater discretionary effort that I was talking about.
Okay. Les, I gotta stop you there for a minute. We gotta take a break. When we come back, we'll get deeper into what it means when we're talking about employee engagement and getting the most out of the employees. You're listening to Shore Law with Chad Malkus on Radio 1240 WCEM AM, streaming at mtslive.com. Be right back.
The Midshore's top stations are bringing in the new year by sending you away, in a good way, as we
bet you didn't know that the best time to begin your pre-crisis planning is while you're in good health. You should revise your advanced health care directives so that it complies with the privacy rules and so that you have the proper tools in place to act when your health begins to slide. It's imperative to have a well-written power of attorney as well. It must be very specific and should range between 15 to 20 pages in length. Your power of attorney should be updated every 3 to 5 years. Be certain that your family can step into your shoes in order to make healthcare and wealth care decisions even after they've entered a nursing home. Otherwise, without a current advanced healthcare directive and durable power of attorney, your family may be forced to go to court to obtain a costly and time-consuming guardianship. You can learn more about these and other changes to the complex elder care and death tax laws by calling me, Chad Malkus, at 410-228-1040. Again, 410-228-1040. Or you can go online at michaelhodes.com. That's Michael, H-O-D-E-S.com. shorelawfirm.com. And as always, if you want to stay up to date on what's going on Shore Law, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Shore Law. And we're back here on Shore Law, legal insights into business, wealth preservation, and life on the Eastern Shore, talking with Les Landis. He is the author of Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and the Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. So before the break, last one, we were getting pretty deep into the whole idea of the heart of employee engagement, and you were talking
about the emotional connection.
Yeah, now, right. talk to me a little bit about that, because you know, it took me a while, for example, to, you know, my original sort of focus in the law was in actually the area of business and real estate. And while I liked that, and while I was interested in zoning, I've found, and I've changed my practice, switched my practice on, it's evolved much more actually into elder care issues, the needs of the elderly, the,
right,
you know, estate planning and that sort of thing.
Right.
And I find that to be a lot more gratifying, a lot more rewarding to me. So, I mean, I guess as far as that goes, I guess I find myself in a good place there. But I know that's very difficult for some people, you know, to get that emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes they might have it originally and then they lose it. I mean, what do you do in those situations?
I'm stumped, to exactly what I said at the very beginning.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have to create the condition in which people are able to do the best they can and give the most that they're able to give.
Okay.
And those conditions are going to vary somewhat from individual to individual. It's very important to understand what's motivating them. You see, one of the big problems we have is we keep talking about how are we going to motivate our employees. Well, what I'll tell you is stop wasting your time, because you can't. You know, people are already motivated by what it is that they are motivated by. What we need to do is to find out what it is that they're motivated by and ensure that the systems and the policies and the processes that we have really support those motivations that people have.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
that gets back to, again, to the emotional connection. So let me go back to where I was when I was when we took our
when
break.
You were so rudely interrupted by my commercials. That's right.
It's all right. I know that this is an enterprise.
Somebody's got to pay for this show.
That's
right.
Exactly right.
Right.
So what I was saying is Ken Kovac, guy that we knew at George Mason University, did some research with tens of thousands of employees around the country, and he asked employees, what are the things that get you to go the extra mile?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just show up for work, but the extra mile. Interestingly, he also asked the managers of those employees, if we were to ask the employees what gets them to go the extra mile, what do you think they would tell us? Now, do you think those two ratings were the same?
Yeah, probably not.
Mm-hmm. Probably not, right. In
right.
fact, they were quite different. So the I'll just tell you the top three. There were a whole bunch that came out of that. But the top three for employees were, number one, interesting work.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, appreciation of work done. And number three, being in on information and decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, what do you think the manager said? Number one. What do you think? You know the answer to this. Number one thing, manager says people want to get to go the extra mile.
That, more money.
More money.
Right.
Good wages.
That's
right?
What I want, you know. And I'm sort of my own boss, so,
that's
you know.
Right.
I always want more money,
yeah.
But,
and
you know, it's never enough.
Number two was job security.
Okay.
And number three was chance to advance. Now,
right.
Those were not unimportant to the employees.
Right.
In fact, they were four, five, and six. But the thing that's interesting is that the top three for the employees, interesting work, appreciation of work done, being in on information and decisions, doesn't cost the company one darn
Yeah, that
thing.
Doesn't cost them anything.
Doesn't cost them anything.
It's just a matter, you know, some, but there's some bosses and some people that are out there that don't, you know, they don't want to engage the employee. They think that they're it's their way or the highway.
Well, and here's why.
Okay. Lay it on me, Les.
It goes to the point you made before.
Mm-hmm.
We think we're the parents
yeah.
and they're the kids. Now,
right.
When we created organizations back in the 19th century, and they were looking for models to use to create this thing called management, they only had three places to look.
Okay.
Parenting.
Yeah.
The military.
Right.
And the Catholic Church.
That's true. That is very true.
I mean, up to then, the whole concept of hierarchy and management didn't exist.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, except, you know, maybe the landlord and the overseer, but
yeah.
You know, that was that was kind of that was a pretty flat hierarchy.
Uh-huh.
And so that's one of the fundamental problems that we get caught in.
Well,
we're using these outdated modes and models, and now we're trying to get away from that, and we're saying, okay, we know we can't be parents. We know we can't be lording over people.
Right.
But how do we create the systems, policies, and processes that allow us to engage people
uh-huh.
without having things go eight ways from Sunday?
Well, what about the military model for things? I mean, what about that for a sort of a model for the workplace? I mean, it certainly works pretty well in the military. I mean, you sort of have to have it in the military, obviously. But, you know, how does that does it translate badly into the workplace?
Well, it depends if you're talking about the old military model
mm-hmm.
or the modern military model.
I don't know if I like the modern military model.
So why not? You know something about it I don't?
It just seems, you know, talking to some of my friends that are in the military, they just say, you know, it's very different than the way it used to be. In some ways better, in some ways worse.
Yeah, you know? Well, and, you know, I'm not an expert in it, but
yeah.
I can tell you what I've read and what I've learned from folks that I've spoken with, and that is that the old model of just charge up, the hill.
Yeah.
Do what I tell you to do. I don't want to hear what you got to say.
Yeah.
Isn't not the way that the military is run anymore.
Right, right.
They really are looking at ways to, quote unquote, engage those employees
yeah.
or those soldiers
yeah.
in really helping to understand what's the best way for us to execute and fulfill our mission.
Right. Well, they want them to be smarter soldiers, too.
That's exactly
I mean,
right.
They want them to think smarter,
yep.
you know, to be smarter,
yep.
and to work smarter, and that sort of thing. Now, I was thinking back to in my former life before I went over to the dark side and became an attorney. I was actually a teacher. I was educated as an English teacher, but
oh,
I
really?
Actually worked for a corporation for a while, Sylvan Learning Centers, which you know
right,
is
sure. I'm
you
very
know
familiar
it's,
with them.
Good you know testing and learning
right.
center and. What was interesting is I started as like the assistant director of education at this center down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and one of the first things they gave me, it was sort of part of the franchise as far as one of the things they wanted from their employees, they gave me this test. It was actually it was sort of focused on what my strengths and weaknesses, my personality. It was called the Caliper, I think. It was,
right.
you know, and it was interesting. I still sort of remember the results of some of these, some of the tests. And one of the things was like, you know, it revealed that I'm much more of a big picture guy,
yeah.
and that. You know, I'm great with like working with a team and sort of leading the team and creating the vision for a project. But if you task me with doing the sort of mundane, you know, day in, day out, actually working on the task, that is not, you know, I sort of flounder in that environment
yeah.
and I'm not going to produce the good results. There's,
right.
you know, find somebody else basically to do that. But you give me the projects. I can set up the systems. I can, you know, put things in place. I can motivate people. I can do all of that. But on the back end, I can't, you know, I'm not the person you want to have focused on the minutiae within
right.
that. And there's, you know, there's other people in the organization to do that. So when we come back, I want to sort of get into that concept and,
sure.
and the concept of sort of testing your employees and trying to find out what their strengths and weaknesses for, because I think it can make, you know, in some ways for a better, work environment.
Absolutely.
All right, so Les, when we come back, I'm talking today with Les Landis. He's the author of Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. It takes like 2 minutes of the show to say the title of Les's book, but I love it. And some great thoughts coming from Les. You're listening to Shore Law with Chad Malkus. We will be right back.
This is Vance Morris, Chief Pimp Officer of Pimp Marketing, the place for profit implementation, and the founder of the Entrepreneur Network interview series. Listen every Tuesday from 12 until 12:30 on Radio 1240 WCEM AM.
40 WCEM AM.
Hey, folks. Chad Malkus for the law firm of Michael Hoodies, LLC. Bet you didn't know that in February of 2006, the government implemented major changes in the Medicaid rules. No longer will your residence be protected if you're the institutional spouse. If your house or family farm is valued at over a certain amount, then it could make you ineligible for Medicaid benefits. For this reason, it's important to do pre-crisis planning and consider using an irrevocable trust or a life estate deed without powers to protect your home or family farm from a long-term care stay. You can learn more about these and other changes to the complex elder care and death tax laws by calling me, Chad Malkus, at 410-228-1040. Again, 410-228-1040. Or you can go online at michaelhodes.com. That's Michael, HODES.com. And as always, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/shorelaw. Stay up to date on all of our great guests, including Les Landis, who is the author of Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. How's that, Les?
I said it a lot faster.
That's but, you know, Les, right before the break, I went on a little soliloquy there, and I apologize for that. But, you know, I was talking about this this test, the caliper test, where, you know, that they had given to me as an employee. What's your thoughts on sort of, you know, testing your employees as far as finding out their personalities so that you can maybe focus their workload, their specific tasks to their strengths, and that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, think it goes absolutely to the heart of what I was talking about earlier when
okay.
I said you cannot motivate people.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
there are two reasons for that.
Okay.
One is you can't motivate your people. This is what people say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How can I motivate my people? And I tell them two things. First, I say, well, unless God has taken you in as a partner, you've taken in slaves, they are not your people.
They're not?
They are not your people.
Ugh.
It goes back to the point I made at the very beginning.
Right.
They are independent, competent human beings, adult human beings, and they just need the right kind of environment in which to thrive.
Right.
The second thing is that you're wasting your time because people already are motivated by things.
Which okay.
is the point you were making before when you were going on your soliloquy, as you said, about
uh-huh.
the things that you can do that you prefer not to do, that,
right.
You know, if you were in this particular kind of situation, you'd perform well. If you were in
right.
another kind of situation, you wouldn't.
It's and probably so stuff I already knew about myself.
Well,
I mean, yeah.
maybe not.
Yeah.
You know, this whole self-awareness thing is kind of tough sometimes, which is why they do a lot of these tests.
Well, not for me. I'm extremely self-aware
because
I'm extremely,
okay,
extremely self-centered, as my wife would say. But no, go ahead. I'm sorry, Les.
Yeah. So let me talk about this whole business of motivation.
Sure.
Typically, we are motivated by the things we like to do, right?
Right.
Pretty simple. And typically, the things we like to do are the things we do best.
Right.
I mean, this is
like drinking at a bar. I'm very good at that.
<That's right. laughs>
Very good.
And
I do it quite well. You know, I
right.
do it quite well. And I'm motivated by it. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So. And so what we need to do is make sure that all of those things are aligned. And we
right.
need to understand with each individual, what is it that's really the underlying motivation for them? Now,
mm-hmm.
there are certain kinds of things we know are pretty consistent with everybody. I just got
okay.
done telling you about the COVAC research.
Right.
Showed that interesting work, appreciation of work done and being in on information decisions, pretty consistent with people.
Okay.
But you start getting down into nuances, and you have to look at, all right, what's going to work for that particular individual? Now,
mm-hmm.
here's the thing that managers say. What am I supposed to do? Just do anything, let people do anything and everything they want? And I say, heck no.
No.
I say, you play a little game you call Let's Make a Deal. Okay? And the
All
deal
right.
is, I want to make sure that you get to do what you need to do in order to thrive and contribute. And the deal is, you need to do some of the stuff I need to have done, too.
Oh.
Fair enough?
Okay. All
Fair
right.
Enough?
I'm with
Let's
you.
Let's make a deal.
Okay.
And so you break work down into three categories. I call it play, work, and hell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's what all work consists of.
Okay.
Play is the stuff that I would do if you never paid me.
Right. Okay.
Like drinking at the bar. Right.
Right. Right.
I would
okay.
do that. You wouldn't have to pay me a dime.
That's right.
Okay. And there are lots of things that employees love to do. That's
right.
play.
Mm-hmm.
Now the work stuff is the kind of thing we're talking about that you got to do. Might
you
not be
do.
Your favorite stuff, but it's not that bad.
Right.
You know, I can live with it. It's part of what I have to do.
Okay.
And there's the last one called hell.
Right.
That's the stuff nobody wants.
Nobody
to
wants
do.
To do. Right.
They hate it. And that's where you got to play, Let's Make a Deal.
Okay.
I got it. We all hate this part. We got to get it done. So let's make a deal. Who's willing to do this? Will you do this? And if you can, here's what I'm going to give to you. So you play that, and again, this is the kind of stuff that just makes sense when you're dealing with other human beings as opposed to children if you're a parent.
Okay.
Or a soldier if you're in the military, the old military.
Okay.
Or somebody in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, as we were talking
about before. Right, right, right.
Now let's go back to the fundamental premise, underlying the book.
Okay.
this whole business about imagination and free will.
Yep.
Now, first of all, folks are sometimes asking, well, why are we putting so much effort and energy into this whole business called employee engagement to get that discretionary effort? Well, there have been countless studies that show the huge impact of an engaged workforce on virtually every single relevant business measure, whether you're talking about revenue or profitability or customer satisfaction and whatever.
Okay.
And in fact, I don't know if you're familiar with this annual Gallup poll on engagement.
Okay.
And they've been showing pretty consistently that only about 30% of employees in the U.S. are really fully engaged.
I'd believe that, yeah.
Now, the actively disengaged, which is a small number as well, I think they figure that's about 18 to 20%.
Yeah.
Those folks are costing U.S. companies more than $300 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars per year.
Wow.
So the impact is huge.
Well, when I hear numbers like that, then I think about it in the government sector, and it's got to be probably 10 times worse than that in the government sector, because you talk about a lot of employees that are not motivated to do anything and are just there sort of, doing the mundane.
Well, again, I'm going to stop you here because it's not about the employees. It's about the systems, the policies, the processes that they have to work in. This is not about people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, on the flip side, on the positive side, there's all kinds of studies out there that are showing the Hay Group did a study showing that those companies who boosted their employee engagement efforts during the downturn, they've increased their revenue growth 4.5 times faster than those who cut back on their engagement efforts. So
well, Les, one of the things you talk about is sort of some of the employees that are, I mean, some of the companies that are good places to work and are very good about, I guess. Can you give a few examples of some places where they're, very heavy on employee engagement and bringing people into it?
So, I'm actually going to tell you one that's been doing it for quite a long time, and they've done it extremely well. And it's a company called Rosenbluth International.
Okay.
And they're basically a travel company.
Uh huh.
And way back in the 70s, 80s. The guy who was the fourth generation head, it was a family-owned business, fourth generation head, Hal Rosenbluth, came in. He wasn't sure he wanted to work for the company, but his old man said, you know what, you're going to start here and at least give it a shot.
Okay.
Put him in a low-level management position, and he kept hearing, the company was talking about, well, the customer comes first, we got to take care of the customer. He's looking around, he says, well, we're talking about this, but we're not really treating our employees very well, and isn't there a connection between those two things?
Right.
And so he started doing some things to really get his employees engaged, and all of a sudden people started paying attention because they were doing some stuff down in his little part of the company that was pretty impressive.
Uh-huh.
Long story short, 20 years later, he's the president of this little family-owned business that has grown from $20 million a year when he came in as a virtual child.
Uh-huh.
20 years later, it's a $6 billion business. And he wrote a book about how he managed to do that. And you know what the title is?
What?
The Customer Comes Second.
Wow. Okay.
And a great little quote I got right here from his book tells it all.
Okay.
Only when people know what it feels like to be first in someone else's eyes can they sincerely share that feeling with others. We're not saying choose your people over your customers. We're saying focus on your people first because of your customers.
Because of your customers.
That way, everybody wins.
Right, right. So by having the employees be the focus, they are going to, in turn, be better stewards of the company and be better with dealing with the customer.
Yeah. Right? Now let's go back to the basic premise of the book, which we've been trying to get at here the whole time.
Okay.
And are you about to take a break or do we?
No, we're good. Go ahead.
We're good. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've been seeing all of this data and looking at organizations and seeing things that work, seeing some that don't. And frankly, I think it's time to stop the studies that show engagement is a good thing. It's a waste of time.
Right. We already know that.
We should be looking at the deeper reasons why it's important and how to apply what we learn from that. And that's when I started looking at, all right, if we're digging down into this stuff, what is it that really differentiates human beings from all other living creatures on the planet, which led me to writing this book? And by the way, it's a business novel, a business fable.
A business fable. Okay.
Yes.
I like that.
So it's
like
a lot
that.
Of fun to read. It's got Barney the Purple Dinosaur and Henry David Thoreau and other characters and even talk about Disney, which is one of those great companies, by the way, that we were talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so I started looking at that, and I said, okay, well, let's think about this. So is it intelligence? And I said, nah, you know, a lot of people would say animals are pretty darn intelligent, sometimes more intelligent than human beings.
Uh-huh.
And then others say, well, certainly animals don't have souls, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, good ones go to heaven and bad ones go to,
sure.
Well, you know where.
Right.
But Disney has already proven to us that's not true because he made a movie called All Dogs Go to
All
Heaven.
All Dogs
right?
Go to Heaven.
So,
right.
You know, we know.
Although
that's
my dog,
true.
If he messes up one more pair of my wife's shoes, I think he's actually going to go straight to hell. So anyway,
I said, let's take a look at this. So I'm actually going to play a little game with you here. I'm looking outside my window right now, and I'm seeing birds flying around here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to ask you to complete this phrase for me.
Okay.
Three as a...
bird.
Of course, right? I gave it away.
Yeah.
And so now here's my question for you. What are birds free to do?
They're free to fly.
Free to fly?
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Crap on my windshield?
Yeah. You know, this is fascinating. I get that from so many people.
Do you?
So let me tell you what birds are free to do.
Okay.
Nothing.
Nothing.
They are programmed to do what they do. They are programmed to fly.
Okay.
Programmed
to build a nest. Yeah.
Build a nest. They are programmed to go out and get worms to eat for themselves and to gorge them up to give to their little birdies. And, of course, the last thing they're programmed to do, as we all know, is to crap on your car.
Right.
After you get done washing it, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Little teasing about that one.
No, that's okay. That's
human beings, however, while they do have some programs, they have the capacity to choose to do things that are not dictated by those programs.
Okay, right.
That's why you got some people who are fat, some are skinny, some are rich, some are poor, some who are in, you know, going out and listening to rock music, some who are listening to Beethoven.
Right.
All of this is a matter of choice.
Okay.
These are choices that people make. Now, second thing.
And it's coming down to your concept of free will.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Second thing,
mm-hmm.
Imagination. Human beings are the only living creatures, I contend, that have the capacity to imagine things that do not exist. That do not exist. They
okay.
can fabricate them
they
in their mind.
They can fabricate them whole cloth. Okay.
Whole cloth. And then, as a result of their capacity for imagination, plus the intelligence and the free will, they're able to actually manufacture and create these things. I mean, look at the things human beings are able to create.
Right.
Is it because of their intelligence? A little bit, but it's mostly because of their capacity to choose and their capacity to imagine.
And the capacity to step outside of some of the pre-programming and
that's
sort of thing.
That's the choice part.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing, and this is chilling. I'm not kidding you. This is what happened to me when I was writing this, because I was thinking about those two things for quite a while before I wrote the book.
Sure.
Somebody literally took over my hands and had me typing, and I was looking at the screen while it was happening, and it said, but here's the important thing, the guru says to this guy in the book. Here's the important thing. One without the other is useless.
So imagination
without free will has no power.
Right. You have no power of imagination
without... has no purpose.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. I'm following you there. So imagination
now,
without free will, I mean, it
has
really...
has no power.
It has no power. It's just... it's
and
empty.
Free will without imagination is... what's the point?
Right.
Yeah, there's no point now.
No point to it. I'm sorry, Les, we got to take a break.
Okay.
When we come back, though, we'll get some final thoughts from you
and
talk a little bit more about the free will and imagination component. Listen to Shore Law with Chad Malkus. Be right back.
I'm Dr. Dr. Cindy Gosser from Bayside Animal Hospital in Cambridge. Join me each Monday at noon for my show, Your Hometown Vet, on Radio 1240 WCEM AM. Every week.
Services Administration.
Now, back to Shore Law with Chad Malkus on Radio 1240 WCEM AM.
Hey, folks. Chad Malkus for the law firm of Michael Otis LLC. Bet you to know that even with the major changes in the Medicaid rules, you can still protect all of your family's assets for the healthy spouse. There's no transfer penalties when assets are moved from one spouse to the other spouse. After a spouse has entered the nursing home, all of a family's assets can be transferred to the healthy spouse. You can learn more about these and other changes to the complex elder care and death tax laws by calling me, Chad Malkus, at 410-228-1040. Again, 410-228-1040. Or you can go online at michaelhodes.com. That's michaelhodes.com to learn all about the services my law firm provides. And we're back here on Shore Law for some final thoughts, talking with Les Landis. He's the author of Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. And Les, before the break, we were getting deep into the imagination and free will components there, and basically you can't have one without the other. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to have, you know, imagination is powerless without free will. Free will is, what's the point? Right, exactly. You can have all the free will you want, but if you're not, you don't have the imagination, you're not creative, you can't do anything with it, then it doesn't make any have any reason to be free.
And so, you know, the importance of that, you know, some folks may say, well, that's a cool idea, so what?
Right, exactly. A lot of my listeners are like, all right, so, you know, get to the point.
So here's the so what.
Yeah.
If we don't design our organizations in a way that honors, respects, and recognizes the importance of imagination and free will, and the fact that it is the inherent, fundamental, driving force for extra effort in human beings, we're never going to get the best we can from it.
Right.
We simply are not going to. And a whole lot of negative things are going to happen. I mean, we'll continue to put square pegs in round holes.
Right.
And then we'll get angry and we'll get confused when people don't perform the way we want.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny, you know, and you were talking about Disney in the last segment. And, I mean, Disney's, a lot of their employees are called Imagineers. They're
the
guys
exactly
that come up, they come up with the concepts for a lot of the parts of the park. And Disney's Imagineers are working on the next, you know, the next section of the Magic Kingdom or that sort of thing.
And you know what? You just hit the nail on the head why this is important.
Wow, that's amazing on a Wednesday.
There was
Tuesday,
a
you know,
there
some,
was a time when we brought people off the farm and brought them out of the housemaids and put them on the assembly line, and we needed people who were complying.
Right.
We had a culture, an industrial culture of compliance.
Right.
That ain't working anymore.
One step above slavery is
that's right. Yeah. You have to ask yourself, do you want an environment and a culture of compliance, or do you want one of innovation and continuous improvement? If you want one of innovation and continuous improvement, you have to regard, respect, reinforce, and support this innate force that drives human beings, which is their imagination and free will. Again, you have to set up systems and processes that get them involved in the effort to design and implement those things.
Yeah.
Again, and, you know, if we don't do that, we're going to continue to try to motivate people to do what we want them to do instead of discovering what already motivates them and aligning those motivations with the needs of the organization.
Okay.
When employees look like they're resisting change, my God, how many times we hear that? We can't get them to change, right?
Yeah.
We're going to interpret it as stubbornness. We're going to say they're inflexible.
Right.
Instead, what they're saying is they have a basic desire to have some measure of control over their frickin' lives.
Over their lives, right, over their day.
We'll keep expecting people to do one thing and we'll watch them do something else and we'll wonder, why won't they do what we want?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, we're going to believe that most people would, to the point you made at the very beginning, we're going to believe that most people would rather be somewhere else than on the job, and then we'll create the very kind of work environment that makes that belief a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. So then we'll create a company that, you know, nobody ever wants to work
at. Now, all of this leads to a very critical factor that goes to the heart of success in an organization. One simple word. It's called trust.
Mm-hmm.
Trust. And if you do things that cut the heart out of imagination and free will, people aren't going to trust you.
Okay.
there are a lot of things that you have to do in an organization to make sure that people, that you have a trust-based organization. You got to have the right kind of management behaviors. You got to have the right systems and processes and so on. In the final analysis.
So you're saying that the systems and the processes help you allow for that trust. So
they either help you or they hurt you.
Or they hurt you. Okay, right, exactly.
And in fact, there. And you know what? We've got them in five real basic categories. And we say if you really want to get people engaged, if you really want to have them have a sense of trust, then you've got to make sure that you design them in what we call people first, going back to the Hal Rosenbluth thing.
Okay.
Customer comes second, people first.
People first.
Five main areas. Measurement, what are you measuring?
Okay.
Second, rewards and recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Third, communication.
Okay.
Fourth, learning and development. And fifth, continuous improvement.
Okay.
Now, all organizations have some kind of system or policy or process or whatever in those things. Some aren't very good, but most of them have embedded characteristics that really don't give people the opportunity to exercise their imagination,
their free will.
And still also to maintain the other thing that human beings do need, which is what all people or all living creatures need, is a sense of security and self-esteem.
Right.
They have to feel safe in exercising their imagination and free will. And then for the benefit of the organization, we also have to clarify the responsibility and provide constructive accountability that people need in order to guide their decisions and their actions, the use of their imagination and free will, so it benefits both them and the rest of the organization.
And the rest of the organization,
the
rest of the company.
That's
all right, Les, I apologize. We've come to the end of very interesting discussion on employees and engaging your employees in the workplace. If people want to learn more about Les's book or pick up a copy, they can visit his website at LandesAssociates.com. That's LandesAssociates.com. And again, the book is Getting to the Heart of Employee Engagement, The Power and Purpose of Imagination and Free Will in the Workplace. Les, I really appreciate having you on the show today. Very fascinating stuff.
Thanks, Chad. I really enjoyed it.
No problem. And you've been listening to Shore Law with Chad Malkus on Radio 1240 WCEM AM and always streaming live at mtslive.com. Have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to Shore Law with Chad Malkus, part of Radio 1240 WCEM AM. Thanks for listening. Tune in every weekday morning from 10 to 11 for more.